हरिः भो सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
के भागवत संदर्भस अध्याय 2 आदि कारण 2 शक्तिस नेचुरली कोएग्जिस्ट विद ब्रह्मन Page 95. Why is the creation made? Since the Lord is the Supreme Personality of Godhead for all living entities, He created this material manifestation for those living entities who want to enjoy or lord it over material nature. As the Supreme Godhead, He arranges to fulfill their various desires. It is confirmed also in the Vedas, Eko Bahunam Yovidadhati Kaman. The Supreme One supplies the necessities of the many living entities. There is no limit to the demands of the different kinds of living entities. And the Supreme One, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, alone maintains them and supplies them by His inconceivable energy. Srimad Bhagavatam 333.3 purport. The meaning is clear. The inconceivable nature is also stated in the following. Shuteshtu Shabda Mulatvad. The defects of the agent do not apply to Brahman because of scriptural statements, which are the only proof concerning inconceivable subjects. Brahma Sutra 2.127. So what's inconceivable, you can't understand because it's beyond the material. And so without the scriptural statements, then we won't understand it. So we're getting all these scriptural statements that, you know, the other philosophies are all bringing up their statements from the Vedas, right? The Mayavadis and others, they're all taking from the Vedas. So they're accepting those. So the point is you have to also accept all the other ones. So when it talks about the Lord is creating everything and still is transcendental beyond that, that has to be accepted because that's what Shastra says. And we can't understand what's inconceivable outside of what Shastra gives us. Yes.
It seems very strange, actually, Mayavadis basically saying everything is illusion, but then they follow the Vedas, but then they don't quite follow.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like...
Well, you have to... Means the background of it means it's... Means anything within karma and jnana without bhakti doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But why this is specific is because you're taking Buddhists and bringing them back into the Vedic context.
Coming from the other side.
Yes. Because just like this, let us say we're going to do something spiritual, okay? And, you know, we have a bunch of Hindus, and we say, okay, so, you know, we're going to run this spiritual program, and so everybody needs to, you know, be up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Is there going to be any groaning?
No.
Nothing. Why? Because it's part of the culture. The religion is based on the scriptures. So they have no problem. Now, you tell that to Westerners? Heavy problem.
Yeah.
So they'll just go, oh, wait, so I just won't go to bed?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I just go straight from the club.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
watch across the street, right?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know? They're on Soho. Yeah,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could do that, right? Come across,
some
catch Mangalarti, then
done.
Come.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's far out. Yeah, so the point comes down is that, why is that? So the point that when you accept the religion, it means you accept the lifestyle of bhakti. Now all you have to do is accept the philosophy. Right? So, and it's not that the Westerners don't have to be convinced also. Right? It means those who follow the non-Vedic, they have to be convinced. So then someone within the Vedic would have to be convinced. So that's there. But once you convince, then it's very easy because the lifestyle is the same. Does that make sense? So in general, anybody who follows the Vedas, their lifestyle and, you know, amongst themselves and devotees is the same. There might be some little differences like that, but that's much of the time that's regional or, you know, whatever it is like that. But the philosophy, you're going to have to be convinced anyway. So once you've done that, then the work's done. It's easy to follow. So if you bring the Buddhists back into following the Vedas, now they accept the Veda, now they can accept about the Supreme Lord. Because otherwise, from Buddhism, they're not going to accept them. You know, so they have the lack of philosophy and the culture. So now they have the culture, and then they're basing their philosophy now on the Veda instead of not on the Veda. So now it's just a matter of being convinced, like you see with Lord Chaitanya and Prakashananda Saraswati. As they explain and they're convinced, then they just take it up. So they don't have to change their lifestyle. Like that. Atmane chaivam vichitras chahi. As various marvelous creations arise from desire trees or chintamani, according to authorities, so we can believe from scripture that various creations arise from the Lord. The Puranas confirm this. Brahma Sutra 2.1.28. So you have these things that the Shastras are explaining, like about chintamani stones and about the desire trees. And so then from there we can appreciate that we've understood this from scripture. This is something beyond our understanding. But it's there and it's accepted, so why we wouldn't accept that the Lord creates and he's still transcendental. Devahuti speaks to Kapila. Anucheda 14. The Shakti is natural to the Lord. That one Brahman shines as Maya with Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas as Sutra. Sutra as Mahatattva, as Ahankar, as powerful energies by taking the form of Devatas, senses, sense objects, and material qualities. That Supreme Brahman is the cause of all the gross effects and all the subtle causes. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.337. Footnote 23. After Mahatattva, which is predominantly Sattva, Sutra appears, which is predominantly Rajas. Then Ahankara, which is predominantly probably supposed to be Tamas. Because otherwise it's Tejas, but then that's a
different thing.
Yes.
So either Tamas or Rajas, but yes, it should be. This is Rajas, so it should be Tamas. Ahankara.
Ahankara is Tamas. Yes, so it should be Tamas. So what does that mean, that guys like Thomas Aquinas and guys like that?
Thomas and Roger, too. Roger also.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, matches for the rabbit, right? Yeah. Yes.
Vedic culture in India, yes? Karma culture. But what was the purpose of Shankara if he again led them to the same culture? And they again
because now they're peaceful. See, before is they're taking advantage, because Karmakanda has been going on, you know, for millions of years. Like that, in the Treta and Dwapara Yugas, and even the beginning of Satya. But then the problem comes is now, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, people are becoming, just the bad qualities are coming up, so they're becoming too greedy and all that. So now they're taking advantage of the animal sacrifices and using them as an excuse. Does that make sense? It's not actually about the Shastra and what the regulation, the restriction. It's about the opportunity for sense gratification. Does that make sense? So then, by Buddhism being there for that few thousand years, then people become peaceful enough that and non-violent that when they go back to the Vedas, that won't be their intention now. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anucheda 14. Okay, we did that. Okay, so the one Brahman shines as Maya with Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, as Sutra, as Mahatattva, as Ahankar, as powerful energy. So Brahman is all these things, because all these are his potencies. So what makes something material is not seeing it in connection to the Lord. Because the point is just because it's his inferior energy doesn't mean that it's illusion. Because it is inferior energy, and it is his. So all that means the energy is non-different from him. So all whatever is there is him. To not see it as him, that's the illusion. To see it as him, that's reality. But it's just as he is all this variety of things, you know, in different with different qualities. The same point is that he is a person, is beyond this being the source, right? And being transcendental to all that, then that situates him beyond all these things. So that's what you're trying to point, is that the energies are natural to him. But it doesn't. But the point is they're natural to him. He's an individual that has energies. So, yeah. Brahman is the possessor of many intrinsic energies, or antaranga shaktis, uru shaktihi. The word eva indicates that the shakti belongs to Brahman, and thus cannot be illusory. This means that the shakti is natural or inherent to the Lord. The cause is explained. He is superior to the external manifestation, the gross world of earth and other elements, and he is superior to the subtle cause, Prakriti. The manifestation of his sarup is Vaikuntha, etc., and the manifestation from Tatasta is the pure jiva. Without his shakti, the material world, spiritual world, and jivas would not exist or function. What form do the shaktis take? They manifest as the Mahatattva from Jnana Shakti, Sattva, and as Sutra from Kriya Shakti, Rajas, as Tanmatras in the form of Artha, objects, Tamas, and altogether as Prakriti. These are the gross and subtle forms. So does that make sense? So that's why you have the Mahatattva, because that's predominantly goodness, because that's all the 8,400,000, the 14 planetary systems, all the different situations within them and combinations that you can get within the material world, right? So that's the primary creation. So it's situated in goodness, because it's the rules of the laws of how it all functions. Then when you add the desire of the living entities to control and enjoy that, then that aspect of Rajas, then you get Sutra. Right? So the Mahatattva is also known as Sutra because, you know, you have the material nature, but it doesn't really mean anything until you apply the living entities and their desire to control and enjoy it. Right? And to function within that, because they're not that, then you have to have tamas. You have to have ignorance. Right? So then that's how you're going to get the false ego. Right? And so how are you going to identify? Because these principles are there, the laws are there. Now you have to identify it as something gross that you can see. So then the tanmatras and everything are there. So that means all the five elements, the tanmatras, the senses that come from that. Right? And then because you have the modes, then you get the mind, intelligence, false ego. And so now you have something to work with. So being situated in ignorance, then because of passion you try to enjoy all that. But the basis of it, it's all based in goodness, because it's all Krishna's energy and functioning according to his rules. Right? Does that make sense? But he is beyond that. He is pure goodness. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So these energies are natural to the Lord. Right? The Lord is superior. Oh, these are the gross and subtle forms. The Lord is superior in the form of two entities as the result, follow. The Purusharta, namely Bhagawan with his powers, conscious entity, and the pure Jiva, conscious entity, because the Jiva follows after the Lord. Thus, his many Shaktis manifest as Jnana, Kriya, etc. Right? So that's how you get everything. So you see this manifestation and all that, the gross aspect of it, like that's the Jnana, right? So, and here is that the Jnana is starting out here. And, yeah, because it's a reflection, you get everything reversed. So, the jnana will create all this, but within that, then you're going to see the sattva, rajas, and tamas aspect. Does that make sense? So the living entities, why are they involved in this? Because of the ajnana shakti. right? They're under the control of that. But the material nature is controlled by the Jnana Shakti. So this is then where the Maya bodies get the idea that Jnana, you know, Shakti is mundane. But that's just, you know, you having to deal with this as connection to the Lord. And so then they'll say the Lord comes from this also. But this is not the position. The position is the Lord being transcendental. Then they're in the transcendental position. So the actual origin of all the knowledge is there. Does this make any sense? Or?
So it's how it's applied.
It's how it's applied, yeah. You know, it's just like, let us say we have a baseball bat, okay? And the kids take it out in the field and you know, hit the ball around and run around and yell and scream and like that, and then go home, okay? So then you'll consider that a proper use. Now how you hold the bat, you know, you hold it at the small end, you know, and you swing the big fat end, and like that. And you does that make sense? You know, that's how you're going to use it, like that. So the mechanical that. Now let's say somebody has a baseball bat and he uses it, goes around and smashing windshields on cars. The technique's going to be the same. But now it's illegal. So that's the whole thing, is that we take it, the mechanics are there, that's the real thing. No, it's how you use it, that's the real thing. That's why the material energy and all that, and all the, what you perceive, that's all abstract. Because abstract means it can be used in any different way. Right? It's just a generic aspect. Now how, according to your values, you use it, then that takes on, that's the concrete element. So because the living entities are using the material world for their own enjoyment, therefore it becomes mundane, it becomes illusory. Right? But when they use the same energy with the same techniques now to serve Krishna, then it takes on that spiritual nature. Because it is Krishna, it is Brahman. It may be inferior Brahman, but the point is it's still Krishna's energy. He's still in control. Okay, so the Lord is superior of two entities as a result, the Purusharthas, right? So Bhagavan and the living entities. So you have all this, you know, the material creation, you know, in goodness, passion, ignorance. Then you're going to have above that, superior to that, is the Jiva and the Lord. And so from that, then you get your Purusharthas. So then you can either have those in connection with the external energy, the Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, or those that are actually in connection with the Lord, the relationship between the Lord and the living entity. Otherwise, the Lord is controlling the material energy, the living entity is trying to control the material energy. If one follows scripture and all those, then there's some cooperation there. Things go in a particular way. You know, they go fairly good, pious. Right? But when one actually sees the real relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord, then it takes on a whole different flavor. Right? So the point is these energies are inherent in the Lord, because it's the relationship between the Jiva and the Lord. Right? So that's why you see the energies, when they're described, they're in context of the Lord. Then the Jiva is explained, it means as another entity, that then is supposed to be servant to the Lord, his natural position. Does that make sense? So, in these discussions, even though the Jiva is another energy of the Lord, and when you're talking about the absolute truth, it'll be brought up in that way. But, at the same time as the Jivas are discussed also, it's because of you're trying to establish a relationship between the Jiva and the Lord. Because the relationship between the Shaktis and the Lord is already there. The Jivas are the only ones that may decide to work within that context or not. So, yeah. The Shakti's intrinsic dependence on the Lord is made clear with evidence. In the beginning, there was one Brahman, Ekam. It took three forms, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Sutra arises from the Kriya Shakti, Rajas, and Mahatattva arises from Jnana Shakti, Sattva. Ahankara, Aham, arises from Tamas. The Vedas speak of these, and the Jiva in its pure form, as well as Vaikuntha, though not mentioned directly, as follows. Sadaiva somyedam agra asid. The universe existed previously as the Lord. Right? So it's already existing there before. And so then that position, now he expands everything, but it doesn't mean that previous position disappears. Right? So on the material world, transformation means when something transforms, it doesn't have the previous form anymore. Right? But so many times it's thought, okay, well, the Lord transforms, so now he's not the same anymore. He's affected by these things, but he's transcendental. Just as the energies transform, it doesn't mean the origin's not there. Just like you take clay, clay transforms into a pot, but the principle of clay still remains. Right? Because all the clay is not a pot. Right? So that nature is there. So the Lord, his energies expand and transform, and you get the material nature. But that doesn't mean that the original nature, where the energy is connected directly with the Lord, is not still there. Right? Otherwise, if not, then how do we get? How would they say that that Brahman is unchanging? Is eternal? Is that so? If it transforms and it's not the same anymore, it doesn't have those qualities that are given to it. So the Shastra says those qualities are there. So how does that work? How can you have the qualities and not be transformed when there's expansion and creation, unless the Lord is transcendental to all this and it's carried out by the energies? Right? So if you put that together, now it all makes sense. If not, then you have to spend a lifetime arguing against this that doesn't make any sense. Because that's where this discussion started, is that the philosophy doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
The same principle applies even for Pradhan.
Same principle applies to Pradhan,
yeah,
means?
Yeah, that means the Lord is unchanging. So Pradhan is there, then it transforms into Mahat and all these different things. So expected that, you know, Pradhan should not be expected. Pradhan is not in the form, in the original form as it should be. It is now transformed to Mahat Tattva and this entire creation. So...
Yes, so then what is,
yeah,
I don't, what's the connection?
Yeah, so the connection is that as the Lord is unchanging, so Pradhan, the principle of Pradhan is still present and still there is a change at the same time, that way, because Pradhan is also the energy of the Lord.
I'm just wondering, the context of why, okay, the clay in the pot, and that gives the example. And then, therefore, the Lord and the creation. So why do we need Pradhan and its transformation and non-transformation to establish the Lord?
I'm not establishing the Lord. I'm establishing the principle of Pradhan itself.
Pradhan?
Yeah.
But you mentioned that Pradhan is changing and not, therefore the Lord is like that.
No, Lord is not like that. Pradhan is changing. The Pradhan was previously present and now it is not present in the same original form as it was before because of the transformation.
But what's the point being made?
The Lord... transforms and it still doesn't change.
Uh-huh.
Similarly, Pradhan, because it is the energy of the Lord, it does transform into Mahatav and other ingredients, but still Pradhan remains. Because my understanding was that Pradhan should absolutely vanish and now these things should exist. And then when the...
But how can it vanish when the outer covering of the universe is Pradhan?
And then, Maharaj, okay, if that's Pradhan, and where do we get Mahatattva from?
Because
it's just like this. For you to make one pot, does that mean all the clay in the cosmos has to be in that pot?
Oh, this the quantity.
Hmm?
Because I also thought that Pradhan is specific amount, and then that amount transforms into Mahatattva.
It may be a specific amount. It's one quarter of unlimited. Then you have three quarters of unlimited. Because it means when you say all the elements, then pradhan is also, you know, is included. Because you have pradhan, you have avyakta, you have mahatattva, you know, and then in mahatattva you have the aspect, mahatattva, the sutra, and then the, you know, the ignorance, this aspect, the gross manifestation that's there. You know, so then, you know, Brahma's doing that aspect. So it's not that it has to disappear, the principle is still there. It's just that when it's all homogeneously together, or when it's separate, but it's still made of pradhan. So it's not going to, it's just like the clay in the pot, it still doesn't change the nature, it's still clay. It means you can call the pot clay. So whether it's all, every last atom of pradhan has disappeared into the creation or not, then, but we see the covering on the outside of the universe is pradhan. Okay. In the beginning, Adao, there was one. Then the various forms arose. This shows the natural relationship of the Shaktis to the Lord. Since nothing else existed, the Lord could not be subject to any conditions. Though the Lord remains eternally perfect with his limbs by the power of his Swarup, he is the material cause and the source of all matter. Since everything in existence depends on his existence, just like the sun rays depend upon the existence of the sun. Tasya bhasha sarvam idam vibhati. By his light all the world is illuminated. Katha Upanishad 2.2.15. Yes, yeah, so the Lord is originally existing, so that means the Shaktis also have to be there, because there's no condition by which these Shaktis would then manifest. That's the problem with the Mayavad philosophy, is that you have Brahman, but then there's this thing, you know, the you know, Jnana Shakti, the Ajnana Shakti, all these things, where do they come from? Because Brahman has no qualities, has no Shaktis. So where did it come from? So there has to be some condition in which is there, then Brahman becomes influenced by this, then you get the, you know, the material creation, the living entities. So that's the problem, is that they don't explain this. So that's a major flaw in their perspective. You know, they'll try to gloss over this and take the attention somewhere else. But the point is they can't explain that. So that would mean if the energies are functioning, energies has to have an energetic. There must be a source. And so if we're talking about right at the beginning in the primordial point, that you can't, if Brahman is the source of everything, that means the Shaktis have to be from Brahman. And it's not a just a condition, they're inherent in Brahman. Does this make sense?
And what do they say?
Sorry?
What do they say? And what do they say about the origin of Shaktis?
They don't have anything to say. They just say somehow or another it's there. Because, you know, at that point they'll just go, oh, it's inconceivable.
So they separate. That's the main issue.
That's the point. That's why we say they're not actually monists. They're dualists. Because So dualism means that you see, you know, these differences, that we don't see it in connection with the transcendental. That means they're purely materialists. They're not actually spiritualists. They may deal with the more aspect of mode of goodness, you know, so they'll have some aspect of that. But, you know, so they're using knowledge and these kind of aspects. But the point is they're still within the material confines, because they only see dualism. They'll say it's all one, but then where are the Shaktis and living entities? So they'll say they're one, so if they're one, then there's no illusion. They'll say, no, there's an illusion. Where's the illusion from? That they can't explain. So that's the difficulty. It's where we'll say it's one, they'll say it's two, and where we'll say it's two, they'll say it's one. Right, so we're going to say that Brahman and his energies are non-different, so he's a non-dual entity. Then he expands his energies. They'll say at this point, no, it's two. Because there's only Brahman and then there's this illusion. But where's this illusion? Where is it from? What's its basis? How does it function? Where does it get its power from?
So they're distinguishing between Brahman and illusion. They're saying
yes.
Two separate things.
Yes.
They're not saying Brahman is illusion.
Yes. And then when we say that the living entities and the Lord and his energies are two, right? They'll say, no, it's all one. So that's the whole point, is by the influence, is that whenever the philosophy is in one way, they'll say the opposite. And in the opposite position, they'll say the opposite to that. So it's just whatever's happening, they'll say. Like that. So if they say it's all one, then it should all be one. So everything is Brahman, so all these energies, the illusion, the jivas, they're all part of Brahman. So that means they have to be Shaktis of Brahman. So they're intrinsic in Brahman. And Brahman, by its very sarup, has these, because they're saying unchanging. But the point is to have variety within the sarup doesn't mean that it's changing. Like this pot, it has different angas, right? And, but it's not that by, you know, talking about the spout, now it's transformed or something. It's still the same pot. You know, so I'm saying, so Brahman has all these energies, and so they're intrinsic in the nature of Brahman. And then as they manifest, then you get all the variety. But that Shakti is coming from Brahman. And Brahman doesn't have to change for the energies to expand and manifest in that, because he's the source of them. So because the energy transforms doesn't mean he transforms. Because we see here, energy can transform at the same time means the electricity. It's not that the generator is there, and when it goes into your house and you run the heater, now the generator becomes hot. And then when we plug it into the fridge, now it becomes cold. No, the generator just remains a generator. It's aloof from this. Whether the currents manifest or not, what it's used for, its transformations, it doesn't matter. So that's the problem, is this they can't explain. And because of that fault, therefore then the whole philosophy has to be speculative to try to explain this. That's the whole thing. So you don't require that indirect, because the scriptures directly say these things. You just take them as they are, and it answers all the questions. So, yes.
It becomes even more difficult when we explain Brahman and the energies, but then we also have to take into consideration Bhagavan and avatars. Mm-hmm. And how is that functioning? Because it's his transformation, but it's Purna. It's
because it's just an expansion of himself. They're just him. The example is given of the candle. You just light all the candles, and they're all the same. So that's the thing. Being the complete personality, then whatever he expands is complete. Because we can say, "Oh no, we take something, divide it up, and then now it's not complete." But that's energies. You know, like that. That's not the origin. That's not the supreme. That's the point. That's where the inconceivable comes in. He's beyond our logic. So he is expanding, and so they're non-different from him. That's why we only make a difference in that there's a mood difference, but it's still the same person. When you take it as a different person, that's why sometimes you don't see the acharyas, and you know, especially Srila Prabhupada, making too much of a distinction between Krishna and his incarnations. Right? Because the whole point is Keshava Drita Nadharupa, Keshava Drita Mina Sharira. Right? It's Keshava who does this. So it's just there's a mood difference, because there's a particular pastime that's being done, and so expressing that in that mood, and there's a form that naturally expresses that mood, and there'll be devotees that go along with that particular mood and environment for that. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just like Nrisimhadev comes out of a pillar, right? And the pillar breaks, and you know, it makes a lot of noise and all that. Now, if he had jumped out of a cake or something, you know, it wouldn't have had quite the same effect. No?
Not necessarily bad. I'm saying not necessarily a bad effect.
Not as bad, but do you think that would have impressed Hiranyakashipu?
Confused, perhaps more.
Yeah, but we're talking about chivalry and anger, so
right.
You have to match that.
Yeah,
right. So therefore, it's Krishna just taking all these different moods, and he can do that unlimitedly. So that's different. He's still the Shaktiman. than the Shakti. So just as he can expand, therefore his energies can expand. So it's not that because the energies, how can he? You always have to remember it starts from him. What qualities he has, that's what you'll see. You know, the qualities of the pot, they're coming from the clay. Not the other way around. So because he is complete and he can expand and still be complete, therefore his energies can expand and still be complete. He's an individual, therefore the expansions are individuals. His energies are individuals. He's conscious, therefore his expansions are conscious and his energies are conscious. So it always starts with him. That's why we're starting with the person. Does that make sense? And so, as he expands everywhere, we call that Brahman. But it's still him who's expanding everywhere. As he enters into everything and controls everything, we call that Paramatma. But it's still him. Is that? So that's the thing, is that that's the idea of the Bhagavad Sandarbha, is that we're seeing it from that principle, from that angle of Bhagavan. It's Bhagavan who expands as Paramatma and is all-pervading. So that feature of the all-pervading aspect, that's Brahma. Does that make sense? You know, when we're saying the Absolute, because the Absolute is what is everywhere, pervading everything, everything is resting on, everything's within. You know, that's the Absolute, so that's the meaning of Brahma. Due to impersonalism, there's this idea that there's this nothingness Brahman, but that doesn't exist. Does that make sense? It just doesn't exist. So that's the whole point. Is that you don't have the idea that we're used to of Brahman. It doesn't exist because it's actually a feature of voidism. Just there's nothingness. So there is no such thing as nothingness. Because everything's the Lord. If everything's Brahman, there's no such thing as nothingness. So even nothing would be Brahman. So, yeah.
You mentioned, Maharaj, that the material world as such is actually perceiving energies which are separate from us. So when we say about pradhan, we understand that also those ten matras and the working senses and also exist in the spiritual world as such. So these are just Cummings' ideas. Is it similar something?
No, it's a different energy.
Sorry?
Your material energy is an unconscious energy. So just as there is conscious, they'll be unconscious. Just as there's unlimited, they'll be limited. So as you have the Supreme Lord, you're going to have the jivas, because they're the most minute. And just as you have the internal potency, you're going to have the external. Right? Because all these aspects of contradictory qualities, those are all going to be there, because that's inherent in the Lord. So the material energy is a particular energy. Is that something? So it's not a problem that it functions here, and the spiritual potency functions there. Make sense?
No, just the main thing is how the dividing element is like a copy of the spiritual, just limited. And also the sense of being able to be separate, kind of, from, although it's not separate, but feeling like it's separate from life.
Yeah, well, that's the illusory energy. That's the potency of illusion. That illusion allows you to not see things connected to the Lord. That's the Ajnana Shakti. The Jnana Shakti, you see everything in connection with the Lord. The Ajnana Shakti, then you're not seeing things connected with the Lord. Does that make sense? So I think when they're talking here about the Jnana Shakti within the material, the Mahatattva, they're talking about the the jnana aspect within the ajnana. You had something? The inconceivable nature of his Shaktis and their natural relation to the Lord is described in Vishnu Purana. Maitreya asks, Nirgunasya prameyasya shuddha syap yamalatmana katam sargadi kartadi kartritvam brahmano bhupagam yata. How can Brahman be the agent of creation and destruction of the universe, since he is without gunas, immeasurable, pure, and without fault? Vishnu Purana 1.3.1. Parasa answers, Shaktaya sarva bhavanam achintya jnana gochara yato to brahmanas tastu sargadya bhava shaktaya bhavanti tapasam shreshta pavakasya yatoshnata. For best of ascetics, the Shaktis of things in this world are in the realm of inconceivability. From these arise the powers of Brahman to create the universe. It's like the power of heat in fire. Right? It's non-different. Fire means it has heat and light. It's inherent. It's intrinsic. So, because the Lord is inconceivable, his energies are inconceivable, therefore, with those energies, then he can perform the creation. So therefore, yes. Okay, that's Vishnu Purana 1.3.2. The commentary says, it was said that Brahman created the universe. However, the Lord is without gunas, is unlimited by time or space. Aprameya is devoid of body, shuddha, or assistance, is devoid of impressions of sin or piety, amalat manaha, and is devoid of raga and dvesha. How can this Brahman create the material universe? Such a person would not create a pot in the material world. The doubt is then dispelled. In this world, the Shaktis of gems and mantras, sarabhavanam, is in the realm of knowledge, jnana gochara, not subject to argument, achintya, inconceivable. The proof is simply that the effect does not take place without the gem. Or it is knowledge in the realm of inference from circumstance. Since it is impossible to contemplate the Shakti in terms of difference or non-difference, chintya, such Shaktis of Brahman, which are accomplished by the Lord's nature, bhava shaktayaha, are the cause of creation of the universe. Similarly, fire has the power to burn. So Brahman has his energies, and therefore things can be done, just as fire has the nature of heat that things can burn. Right? Though fire is not burnt, but other things can be affected. Thus creation arises from Brahman, who possesses inconceivable Shakti, and upon whom the gunas are dependent. Because right? The gunas are dependent on the Lord, since they're part of his Shakti. Right? So as the Shakti is dependent upon him, the gunas are dependent upon him. Therefore, he can't be controlled by the gunas. Shruti says, he has no body and no senses. No one is equal to him or higher. His supreme power is manifold. His actions are naturally revealed with knowledge and strength. Svetasvatara Upanishad. Mayam tu prakritim vidyan, mayinam tu maheshwaram. No prakriti, which is maya, and that Supreme Lord who controls maya. Svetasuttara Upanishad 4.10. Or another meaning is as follows. There are Shaktis in the realm of inconceivable knowledge for all substances, like the power to burn in fire. The Shaktis of Brahman are non-different from his sarup, bhava shaktayaha. Shruti says, parasya shaktir vividhaiva shuyate. It is said that the Lord has various Shaktis, No one can refuse the power of gems and mantras, just as one cannot refuse the example of fire and burning power. Thus the Lord has unlimited powers, right? Because we said before is that because the Shastra says it, we have to accept it. Right? Because it's been there. Because it's beyond the power of reasoning. Because when you go beyond the material, what you can perceive with the senses, you're outside the realm of what your intelligence can analyze. So then the transcendental has to be appreciated coming from the transcendental platform. So since scriptures are revealing that transcendental platform, and therefore we have to gain that knowledge from the scriptures. And as we see the scriptures say all kinds of technical things here that we see by using it, they work very nicely. So why wouldn't they be in the talk about the spiritual world and the Lord in his transcendental position? Why wouldn't that be also correct? You know, it's just like, let's say an astrologer. You go into an astrologer's office and you sit down. Traditionally, they would tell you stuff, right? And why do they tell you stuff? So that you know that they know what they're talking about. You know, if they know you and you have that faith, they don't have to start off with all that. They just start talking about whatever it is that you want to know about. Does that make sense? But first they have to establish these things. You know, that's why they'll say, oh, you have here, you have a brother, you know, like that. But, you know, like that. So, oh, how does he know? You know, so then you're going to listen to him. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point. So the scriptures, they're talking about how the material world works. And then you're going to believe in scriptures. So then you're going to believe how the spiritual world works and the Lord. Right? At the same time is when that's understood, now you know how to use those same things that we're gaining faith in, how to use those in connection of the Lord. How to use the material energy and its mechanics to serve the Lord. So it will give them that faith and focus in whatever dharma, artha, kama, or moksha they're into. Then from that, then if they have proper association, then they can see is that there's the fifth purusharta. Seeing that fifth purusharta, then they're also able to appreciate that the four purusharta's, they're just engaged in the Lord's service.
So they're kratvartha. In the purusharta of Anandamaya, everything else would be kratvartha.
Yes, everything else would be part of that. It's the mechanics you use to get to offer the result. Yeah. So then they just become part of it. If you're not seeing it, you separate it off because it's mundane. You know, it's just like the child is not behaving properly and they're misusing things, so you just tell them don't use these things. But once they know how to behave, then they can start using them. So the whole point is when we see the material energy is separate from Krishna, then the problem is it's all Maya. When you can see everything in connection with Krishna, now it's no longer Maya, it's just tools to use in Krishna's service. So this all depends on the consciousness. That's why you'll see sometimes it's talking about how everything's engaged, and it's other times it's talking about renunciation. That. Yes.
But using the same principle, we can present Krishna consciousness to the senses. If we show them material achievements of three different, then we can present, so then we can say that.
Yes, but you be careful. You don't want them to get attracted to that and then spend their time doing that, because otherwise you're probably that was. Well, London had a bit of trouble with that because of modern scientists getting attracted to Vedic science. And then they had the V2, you know, missiles, you know, happening.
Didn't go too well.
Hmm?
Yeah, that didn't go too well.
Does that make sense? Bombing of London, V2 missiles.
Purport.
Yes. Does that make sense? So that they got from studying the Vedic literature. Right? So otherwise no one had an idea about that. They you know, so So that's the problem, is you have to be very careful. You have to be going back and forth. You show something and then show how it's the, you know, that's how Prabhupada would do. He wouldn't just explain all the technical and then give at the end the conclusion and that. He would, as he's explaining everything, he would connect everything to Krishna.
You see, in every paragraph of his purports, he's always putting in the Supreme Personality.
Yes.
Always linking it.
Yes, yes. So each point, you know, it's just like, let's say you have 5 points that you're going to make. It's not that after the fifth point is made, now you give the conclusion and connect it to Krishna. He'll connect each of the 5 points to Krishna individually and then show how all that goes together.
It's the same problem like my body takes all the mechanical things.
Yes. They just take the mechanical stuff and use that to so-called prove their philosophy. That's what everybody does. So that's why you always have to show is everything that they're working with, it connects to Krishna.
What if you're preaching to some, you know, real hardcore materialists, bankers, and they're gonna storm out the door if you link every point to Krishna?
It means you link how much? It means, in other words, you can't not link, because then they'll get distracted in one way. But if you, you know, you have to choose.
So it's semantics has to be chosen.
Yeah, it's just that's why different audiences, you're going to use different language, different examples, different tone.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So that's there. It's just like, let's say you have a pack of dogs, right? Now, if you take a humble attitude, what happens? Right? They chew off your kneecap, right? You know, so like that. But if you show attitude, then they kind of, you know, like that. So you have to find what works for that group. And so that's why different individuals will be, more, you know, let's say, stronger or more outstanding in particular kinds of preaching. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so then it's just a matter of which things you have the nature for, and you work in those fields, like that. If one's transcendental, of course, one can make it work. But at the same time, as you still have to know how to use it. But if you can only use that, then that will limit you, because you have to be able to see how you adjust. And like we're saying, is that we're seeing this one somehow to this one. I think I mentioned before, this one girl, she grew up with I think it's out Kenya or something, that there's an area where you have some aboriginals, and it's an area where just people don't go and that. So even the animals don't even know what humans are. Maybe now it's different, but before it was like that. So when they see humans, they're not afraid, or they're not this, they just never seen them before. So there was a group of people, they were also kind of like that. You know, that they stayed out, and they would move in this way. So somehow this girl ended up being raised by them. And then, you know, at some point, they must have bumped into, you know, some explorers out there, and they figured out that she's not actually a local girl, seeing that she's twice as tall as them and a slightly different color. So then she ended up, they figured out, whatever. And then she went back to the place. And she was showing, you know, what they could do. She went out right to a pack of cheetahs. You know, and they're fast. So you're not going to outrun a cheetah. She went right there, and they're all there, and they're all, you know, like this. So she just walks right up to them, and she just stands there. She's got the attitude, and so they don't do anything. Then she'll turn as if she's going to run, and so they start to move forward, and she immediately turns back and has the attitude. And then they freak, and she keeps doing that until she's sitting there petting them, feeding them, you know, just like a house cat. So that's the whole thing, is that you use the attitude, you use the method that works on that, but the point is that you're trying to get to a thing of proper interaction. So you show the attitude, but it's not about showing that you're better at this and that, and so afterwards, you're just trying to get through that they take you seriously. And once they do take you seriously, then you can relax and behave, you know, appropriately. You know, because bankers can, you know, it means, in theory at least, I mean, from what I've heard, can be human. Right?
I've seen a few.
Yeah, okay. Lawyers, that's another discussion. No. But you know, but, you know, yeah. So it's just a matter of that's what preaching means, is to be able to appreciate what language, what examples, what vocabulary, what attitude, you know, what kind of presentation that will work with that group. That's preaching. So to say, well, that's soft, the heart, no, that's preaching. Now to do that and not give Krishna consciousness, that's called soft preaching. That you, what benefit they get. And if you give Krishna consciousness but don't consider those things, that's what we call hard preaching. So neither of those is proper. But at least the one, they're subject to transcendental sound vibration. And then even that, the more sincere ones, will come forward. You know, you may alienate the whole room, but one guy will become a devotee. So you can't say it doesn't work. It just doesn't work on as wide a range.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's all. So that's what you're doing. So you just have to find that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to be careful, is that you have the aspect of catching the fish without getting wet. So in other words, if you become yeah, but if you become corporate.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either, so.
Okay, so in this case they're so dry, so you have to catch the fish without getting dusty. So, yeah. Yes.
Many devotees in Kyrgyzstan, they translate the Bhagavad Gita and they want to distribute it in country. And for this purpose, because it's a Muslim country, they want to arrange a scientific conference with the local fans. And I was involved in this, and the idea for preaching that we need to connect Bhagavad Gita with the point that Vedic culture was in their country before Islam. But my doubt is that many scientists now have idea that yes, Vedic culture was here, and that's why it was our culture, and from us it came to India. And it, I pray that it can inspire the national idea of generation of Vedic culture. Can we use this idea for preaching, for distributing Bhagavad Gita, or better to not touch it?
The whole point is that means you'll have commonality in culture, because culture is culture. But the principle that why use that aspect, because that's where you run into problem. It's just like just to take a common point here is that let's say you have the Shiites and the Sunnis. No?
Sunniti Shiite.
Okay. Some translation. Okay? So now, are they killing each other over the point that Allah is God or not? Right? And that there's only one God. No. Or that he has, you know, he's sent his prophet. Okay. So that means the philosophy is not where they're fighting. They're fighting over the culture. You understand?
Way of ruling. They fight about way of ruling who must be.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying. It's down on the managerial level of things, the organizational level in this thing. But on that higher level, there's no problem. So the thing is that's the level to preach at. if there's only one God, and so like this, and so then the whole point is that at least the Mohammedans, they accept that there's many, many prophets. Right? And so, you know, this is another example of where it's being spoken. Right? So the Lord is speaking here to Arjuna. You know, he means you have, you know, the Old Testament, so many things, and then the Lord speaking to, you know, Abraham and Moses and Isaac and Jacob and whoever else is around. Well, does that make sense? You know, like this. And so you have these. So the principle is this. Here's another. So they're bringing out the you know, these technical, metaphysical things like that that weren't necessarily discussed so much in the other places. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's about the relationship of the living entity and the Lord. So that's the essential point. Now, in expressing that, there's going to be a difference. This is because you have that individuality. You know, let's say even in cooking, you have, let's say, a national preparation that everybody cooks this. But you go to each individual house, it will still be different. Even though it's the one preparation, but everybody makes it different. You know what I'm saying? So there's always going to be, it's the same thing. They're all worshiping the Lord. They had just happened to do it in a different way. Does that make sense? You know, someone's going to bow down five times a day. We're going to bow down, you know, whenever we're always in contact with doing something in connection to the Lord. So when we're doing that, we're going to be offering obeisances. So it's not a fixed number or anything like that. Does that make sense? You know, others are going to go and, stand and offer prayers in front of a wall. Does that make sense? You know, so the principle is the same. Does that make sense? So it's just like the other ones, it's like the wall is there, but it's not so important. Right? There's always a wall. Right? If you're going to have any kind of, you know, the place of worship, there must be a wall. Right? And everybody's going to face the wall. But they're not necessarily going to do much interaction with the wall. So other groups interact more with the wall. Like that. Does that make sense? And so we're interacting with the person who the wall is representing. Yeah. You understand? So you have to go above. That's why the Vedanta is universal. It goes above the conditioned considerations. And then when you come down into the condition, then it's just these are different ways it's expressed. They're doing the same thing. Right? People go to the church or the synagogue or the mosque to worship the Lord, to show their respect for the Lord. So why are they creating a problem? Just because you're not there doesn't mean it's bad.
What if you can be totally afraid that if you will use the deductive way of thinking, people in Kyrgyzstan will say, in this case they will accept and they can say that okay, you stay in Islam and you stay in your culture. But they want to force them by telling that it's your culture which was before and you need to take it.
Yeah, but then if that works, but what happens if it goes the other way and that they say that that culture came from Islam and so then that means we're going to have to be practicing what they're doing. At least in the other way, they'll leave us alone. Point is you find how you get through, because the deductive method is how it works. It's coming from God. It's not coming from us. So it comes from us, that has a problem. That creates the problems. Does that make sense? Yeah.
As in terms of preaching, if we found ourselves, as you explained, we're good for a certain audience, should we try to expand our preaching or just stick to the audience we're good at?
Generally, it's just whatever you're good at, you do that, because you have limited time, right? And so then whatever you can get the maximum effect from, why not apply yourself there? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that. If the area of your best ability, there's not so much of that opportunity available, and other kinds of preaching are more available, then that time in between, then you might try out these other features. Does that make sense? But if you can keep yourself fully engaged, in that particular kind of preaching, what's the problem? It's not that you have to do something else. It's not. It's the nature is there, so then follow that nature. But you have to see, is are you getting results? Are you producing individuals who are interested in pure devotion? That's how you know it's successful. If they're only interested in that particular external aspect of Vedic culture, you know, let's say you're preaching yoga and all they're interested in is yoga, and you know they don't mind a little of this and that, so then, you know, if that's all you can do, great. But one should understand is that the real success will be is that people can see its connection to Krishna and be interested in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So just because, oh, well, we got him to the mode of goodness, it's like whoopee. You know. So the thing is if we're looking at it, oh, we're just getting to mode of goodness. Okay. And this concept of mode of goodness, how would a Westerner even know about that? Right? Only from the Vedic literatures. And would they have known about the Vedic literatures? No. So it's only by Prabhupada's grace. Right? So then we're learning from Prabhupada's books about this mode of goodness. And so then if this mode of goodness is so great, and this is in the Vedic literatures is said to be a waste of time if you're not seeing it in context of God consciousness, then how much greater is devotional service? So then why one wouldn't focus there? You know, since when is it a mission to establish people in the mode of goodness? You know, especially when mode of goodness starts with, you know, washing your feet after going in the bathroom. And since we're not doing that, there's a good chance we're not actually situating the goodness. They come and they do 20 minutes of yoga, 45 minutes of yoga, and then go out and eat a, you know, how you say, a Mac double cheese. It's not exactly that they're situated in goodness. You know. Okay, they get a milkshake instead of a coffee. So, a little more goodness. Yes.
As far as I understand, self-preaching, meaning you soften up people and make them relax, and then you present Krishna consciousness.
If you do that, yes. Okay. If you do that, that's great. Okay. Point is that, see, is this, the problem comes is that we're creating a dualistic concept here, that there's hard and soft preaching. There's literally only preaching.
Right.
So what works is preaching. So now if you go into the audience and you talk this and that and whatever it is and they get relaxed and then you get into Krishna consciousness, then that's fine. That's what you have to do with that audience. You know, other different audiences, it works differently. You know, some people want to know about something immediately. You know, some people then you have to, you know, give it some time to, you know, work in and soak in. So adjusting to the audience that they're able to appreciate and understand, that's called preaching. So this idea to say, oh, well, this is soft. No, it's until it gets to, it's just like karma yoga. If it doesn't get the connection with Krishna, it's only karma. You know? So to say it's soft preaching, it's only when it gets to actual dealing with Vedanta that it's preaching. Otherwise, it's just soft. You know, at least the hard is preaching. You know, so at least transcendental sound vibration is there, though it may not be greatly appreciated. But the agyata sukriti will remain. So that's the whole thing: is you have to find what works and all these different things like that. So whatever it does, that's what you use. But your goal is to get to the goal is to bring people to pure devotion, not volume. Oh, but so many people, if we talked about Krishna, people would go away. Says, well, so we're just here to gather people. The success is that more people come. But they don't hear about Krishna, so then what's the success? You know, you could be giving out free lattes and you probably get more people come. You know, wow, 15 people are coming. Yeah, go out in the quad and give out free food. You'll see hundreds will come. At least they're getting prasad. You know. So it's what's the effect? So if it's just to have more people, then that's numbers. And so that's going to be impressive to, that's not going to be impressive to Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Right? And if it's numbers but you're not making any profit, it's not going to be also to Vaishyas. So that means only Shudras, because you have more people, so you're known and this and that. You know, so, you know, nice, but, you know, we should try to take it further. Does that make sense? Yeah. So being able to talk these things, you have to see, it's how you use the language, how you talk, what's the attitude. Because otherwise, straightforward, you can't do it. But the difficulty is, the difference between soft preaching and preaching is what is the faith. If you have faith, you can use, you know, all these various kind of tactics to catch their attention so you can, you know, give them Krishna consciousness. But if one is afraid of saying this or that, then is the faith strong enough? You know. Then if that's the case, you don't have to do that, better go out on Harinam. You know, because it's us and that, and, you know, we're just who we are, and people accept that, you know, the weirdos in the bedsheets, and we're good. At least they get some proper Agyata Sukriti. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Thus the Lord has unlimited powers. Shruti says, Sava ayam asya sarvasya vasi sarvasya sana sarvasya dipati. He controls everything. He is the Lord of all, the controller of all. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Because of Brahman, Brahmana, creation takes place. Sargadya bhamanti. There is no deficiency in this reasoning. The question assumes that Brahman is without qualities. The answer assumes that Brahman has qualities. Thus, the question is valid when it states Brahman is pure without any qualities. In the answer, that is refuted, and Brahman is established with shaktis, or qualities. In the question, Brahman has no shaktis. The question has a different reference. Brahman is without material or spiritual qualities, and thus beyond proof. And thus it is pure, shuddha, without fault, not something which appears otherwise by the influence of another object, like crystal nectar, the colorful object, right? Because then it takes on that quality. The question takes support of Brahman without qualities. Right, so, yeah. Yes. So the question is, if Brahman is without qualities, answer assumes that Brahman has qualities, right? So then, but now, what qualities? Thus, the question of value when it states Brahman is pure without any qualities, means no material qualities. Because you have to establish, because the problem is people, because of their reference, they will take it, the qualities, form, everything is material, right? Because it's an ascending process. So you have to establish that the Lord is beyond this. So he has no material qualities. So then the Shastras are there for discussing how he has none of these material assets. At the same time, as then we see in other, that if you're saying he has no Shaktis, so if you say he has no qualities, you're saying he has no mundane. But if you say he has no Shaktis, then that's a different question, because there the Shakti is inherent. Otherwise, how is there anything to discuss? How is there anything being manifest? And since everything has to be Brahman, therefore how is it there unless there are Shaktis? So he has Shaktis, but they're beyond. He's transcendental. Right? And the Shaktis are inherent in him. Then that transformation, you get the material. So, right? So he's not influenced by anything. So it's not like the crystal, you put it next to something red, it takes on the red color. You put it next to something blue, it takes a blue color. The refutation first rejects Brahman without qualities and accepts Shaktis of Brahman in order to accomplish Brahman's agency. Then, in order to present qualities of Brahman, an example is given. Qualities in Brahman are not like temporary heat in water, but rather like the intrinsic heat of fire. Right? Because water you can create, you can, by being in association with heat, will take on that, but then it'll lose it. But fire, it's inherent. If you have fire, there is heat. You know, otherwise then it would be hit or miss. You go out camping, you know, it's cold, you start a fire, it has no heat to it. You know, you can't warm up, you can't cook lunch, you know, then that would be a bit of a problem. You know, people would probably stop going camping.
Just jump in the lake, it's always warm.
Really?
The other way around.
Oh, I see, yeah, yeah. Warm up in the lake and you can cool down by the fire. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.